Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Wednesday, today we're going to preview USC's upcoming game against the Colorado Buffaloes. Of course, USC going to Boulder this Saturday to take on the Buffs. A win means USC wins the Pac-12 South title. So obviously a very important game in the Pac-12 South. We're going to talk to Adam Munstertiger, who publishes BuffStampede.com, coming up in just a minute, about the Buffs, get a feel for what this team is like and what USC will face come Saturday. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call us at 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. You can call, leave a brief voicemail, or you can text us at that number as well. And after we talk to Adam, I'm going to answer some of the leftover questions that you sent in after USC's win over Arizona. So we'll have like a solo podcast segment about that a little bit later on. Probably tomorrow we'll have a USC recruiting podcast as well. And we still have the Family Feud podcast coming up. We'll have our Facebook Live show Thursday at noon, also noon Pacific time, with Keely, Shotgun, and myself. So go check that out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/USCFootball.com. But you can find us. We do our live show every Thursday, and it's fun. We answer your questions live and have a really good time with that. Okay, and before we talk to Adam Munstertiger about this Colorado game, I wanted to let you know about SeatGeek. If you want to buy tickets to a sporting event or a concert, it can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy using SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seat at the best prices, and it's fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like the Trojans in person, and SeatGeek will help you get you closer to the action. So I have SeatGeek app on my phone, looking at it right now. So of course, the only home game left is UCLA at the Coliseum. So tickets for that one start at $91. Hey, if you want to be out in Colorado, you can get tickets starting at $52. And they'll have tickets for the Pac-12 championship game as well, if you want to go check that out. But it's great if you look at the app, it'll show you where the seats are, if it's a good value or a bad value. So it'll kind of recommend you, hey, if you're this is your price range, these are the seats that you'd want to get. So pretty cool. And then best of all of our Peristyle Podcast listeners are going to get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app on your phone, enter promo code USC. That's pretty simple, right? Enter promo code USC. That's promo code USC for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Okay, as promised, we are joined by Adam Munstertiger. He does a great job covering the Colorado Buffaloes. He's been the publisher of Buff Stampede since 2003. You can follow him on Twitter at AdamCM777. What's up, Adam? How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, Ryan. How are you?
Can't complain. It's I can't believe college football is winding down. I mean, it just seems like it just started, you know?
It goes by with the blur. There's no question about that.
Well, this is it's been an interesting season so far in the Pac-12 South. USC's on the verge of clinching. The magic number, I guess, is one. Obviously, the Colorado Buffaloes stand in the way. Wanted to kind of talk to you about the team a little bit, do a little game preview, if that's cool with you.
Sure, absolutely. Sounds good.
So kind of looking at this Colorado team, I think coming into the season, it felt like the offense was going to take a big step forward. Stephen Montez, who was kind of sharing duties with Sefolufau, and Philip Lindsay is going to be a senior. Seemed like the offense was going to carry this team. The defense had a lot of seniors that they lost from last year. Jim Leavitt, leaving. It seemed like there might be a little bit of a step back on the defense. How have you felt this kind of team evolved over this year? Was it really the offense kind of carrying the way and the defense kind of lagging behind a little?
Not really. It's been the most bizarre season that I've covered, and I started covering Colorado back in 2003, so a pretty sizable sample size there, it's been the hardest team to kind of put my finger on and get the pulse of. And even Mike McIntyre, CU's head coach, said in the preseason, this is going to be a different team than last year, alluding to your point there that our offense is going to have to carry us in games the way our defense did a year ago. And they come out the gates and they win their first game 17-3, and everybody's kind of scratching their head and going, huh, this wasn't quite the explosive offense we were expecting, and this is not the defense we were expecting. And it's changed a little bit as they've gotten into conference play. The offense has had some big games, and even a game where they lost against Arizona, they put 42 points. And that, those are the type of contests we kind of expected, the 45-42 type games, and there haven't been many of them this year. They did get blown out by Washington. They got blown out at Washington State. So there's been times when the defense has been as poor as we thought, but other times when they've looked much better than we thought. Last week was a pretty good kind of a microcosm of the season. They basically shot themselves in the foot early. Should have been up 21-0 early on Arizona State, but a couple drops, a couple missed fires from Steven Montez only had them up by 3 points at halftime. And then the Arizona State offense kind of wore down Colorado's defense as they went along, and DeMario Richard went beast mode in the fourth quarter. And that's been Colorado's biggest consistent weakness, has been their run defense this year. They rank in the hundreds there, 11th in the Pac-12. Only UCLA, which is historically bad in that sense, is worse than Colorado in the Pac-12. So, again, looking to this Saturday in the matchup against USC and Ronald Jones, that makes you feel kind of uneasy if you're a Colorado fan, because they haven't proven to stop other talented backs, and certainly Jones is one of the best out there. So that's got to be the biggest concern and the biggest key going into this Saturday's game.
Yeah, it was funny. So I'm watching Steven Montez this year, and it just seemed like a slow start. But I guess it was 2 weeks ago, he kind of just went off, and like it seemed like, okay, this is what we expected. Because, I mean, last year when he played USC, didn't have a great game, but it was like he was coming in, and it was just this shared thing. It felt like if he was just going to be given the reins, Montez was going to go nuts. I guess it took him a little while, but it seems like he's playing really well now. And in the run game with Phillip Lindsay, he's a stud, 133 yards a game. Does it seem like this offense is really kind of clicking right now?
It's starting to. Yeah, they did. I mean, they did get shut out 3 weeks ago at Washington State. So again, the consistency isn't quite there. They should have been up by a lot more than they were at Arizona State to kind of put that away early in that game. So they still at times shoot themselves in the foot. Montez, the expectations were high for him coming into this season, because when he had replaced Sefolu-Fowler times last year and was given a week to prepare, knowing that he was going to be the guy, he had some really quality starts, and he's got a lot more talent than Sefolu-Fowler did. But Sefolu-Fowler had that intangible, that toughness factor to him that sometimes tough to quantify. Montez has almost got too much arm strength. At times he kind of waits for his guys to get open, almost kind of like in a Colin Kaepernick way. He doesn't really anticipate things all that well, and he's struggled with reading defenses and coverages, which has frustrated Colorado's coaching staff, and they actually open up the quarterback competition after they did get shut out in Pullman. So his job is not as safe as maybe his numbers would indicate that he should be. I mean, his passer rating is still pretty good. It's in the top half of the Pac-12. And he's had some really good improvisational skills that he's shown on the field when plays are broken down. But again, it's just not the consistency factor there. It hasn't helped, Stephen, that the offensive line for Colorado has underperformed. This was a group that brought back four of their five starters from last year, and that new fifth starter is a fifth-year senior. So you expected that group, they were lauding it to be maybe the best offensive line Colorado's had since 2001 when they last won a conference championship, and that group has not come anywhere near that. They actually gave up as many sacks through six or seven games this season. I think it was seven games this season as they did in 13 a year ago. So not only have they not gotten better, they've regressed this year. And so at times that's tough when you have a sophomore quarterback that can't quite trust the line in front of them. And then that group has suffered some injuries. Tim Lenott, arguably their best offensive lineman, who's played at both center and right guard this season, suffered a torn Achilles out in Tempe last Saturday, so he's out for the season. So that's a group. I talked about Colorado's run defense being a weakness. Colorado's O-line now, especially with Lenott out, is the big weakness on that side of the ball.
It seemed like after that, it was like a monsoon game against Washington State where, they got shut out. But that quarterback competition seemed to kind of boost up Montez. I don't know. We'll see. But that one pass he had, so, you know, three, if for people who don't know, three great receivers, Shea Fields, Bryce Bobo, Devin Ross. It was going to be an 80-yard bomb against Arizona State that hit Shea Fields in the numbers. It was a perfect pass. There was no one within like 20 yards. I think it was a flea flicker. He just flat out drops it. You're like, oh, that. Rarely do you see just 7 points just poof go away.
Yeah, and like I said, they should have been. Devin Ross later took dropped a touchdown pass, and Steven Montez misfired on a couple of throws near the end zone. They're up 21-0 that game. Probably results in a win for them. Instead, obviously, they lose at Arizona State. If Colorado can't win one of the next two games and they get shut out from bowl eligibility, that play to Shea Fields is going to be a play that Colorado fans remember for a long time.
Yeah,
it's very uncharacteristic. Shea Fields has dropped way more passes this season than he did his first 3 years on campus. I don't know what that is. That group you mentioned, they're super talented, but that's another group that hasn't quite lived up to the hype. They put up numbers, but they actually had a lot of drops as a group. And I don't know if they were reading their press clippings or what, but Bobo, Fields, and Ross were a better trio last year than they've been this year.
Yeah, what you mentioned the sacks. I believe 31 sacks allowed. I think USC's leading the nation, like 33 or 34 sacks. So that's certainly going to be something to watch. USC's kind of banged up on the defensive line, so we'll see how that kind of plays out. But on the defensive side, giving up 381 yards rushing yards to ASU, obviously not great. You know, when you play like in Arizona, you're going to give up a lot of rushing yards. ASU hasn't been a great rushing team, and USC's been running the ball well. Ronald Jones has over 400 yards the last 2 weeks. What can this Colorado run defense do to try to slow down what USC's been doing lately?
Cross their fingers and pray. I mean, honestly, I don't think there's no way they're going to stop Ronald Jones. To somehow limit him to, I mean, you would almost take 130 yards given up to him, given, you know, how much success he's had and how much Colorado's defense has struggled in run defense. And it's not necessarily a scheme thing. If you watch the Arizona State game when they were running for huge chunks of yards, they're basically bulldozing Colorado defenders on their way to those yards. It wasn't like there were these wide open gaps that they were finding these lanes. So that's the most disconcerting thing. If Colorado wasn't in the right spots, then you go, well, you just need to fix that up schematically. But they were right there, and yet Demario Richards is just running over guys. Colorado just does not have the size or talent on their D-line to compete with the Washingtons, the USCs of the world right now. And you even saw that last year, as magical a season as they had in 2016, winning 10 games, winning the South Division. When they went up against Washington in the Pac-12 title game, when they went up against Oklahoma State in the Alamo Bowl, you saw that weakness exploited, and they lost their three starting defensive linemen last year. So they've tried to rebuild that group through the junior college ranks. And yeah, maybe you need to do that one or two guys, a recruiting cycle, but they've made that too much of their focus. They have not done a good job of recruiting prep defensive linemen under Mike McIntyre and their D-line coach, Jim Jeffcoat. They've done an excellent job of reloading in the secondary. I mean, they had three defensive backs drafted, and yet that group has been one of the better, you know, top half of the Pac-12 secondaries after losing all that talent. So they've done a really good job recruiting there. Their linebackers are pretty good too. It's just, it's up front defensively. And I talked about their offensive line struggles. When you have both lines underperforming, it's just really hard to win football games or be consistent in the Pac-12.
Who were a couple of the standouts on the Colorado defense? Who guys have kind of stepped up and played really well this year, you think?
Their best defensive player is Isaiah Oliver. He's actually a decathlete on CU's track team.
Oh, wow.
And done really well in that regard. And he's just a freak athlete. But he's missed the last two games with an unspecified lower body injury. Mike McIntyre said they didn't know until 5 minutes before the ASU game that he wasn't going to go, which is a lie because he wasn't warming up. So they clearly knew at some point before that, but by him making that comment, it sounds like it was more of a game day type of thing. So maybe he'll be back this week. McIntyre, like a lot of coaches, start to get kind of tight-lipped about their injury situation unless, like, when not, a guy goes out for the season. So we don't know if he's going to be out there. That would obviously be a big boost for them because they lost Ryan Moeller there. They call him a buck backer. It's basically a lot of programs might call it a rover. It's a guy, kind of a hybrid piece that they utilize his versatility. He's a senior with a lot of experience. He's definitely, it sounds like he's going to be out this week on senior day. So unfortunate for him. In terms of guys that are healthy that are really good, Evan Worthington, again, a hybrid guy, can play safety, can even come up, play nickel, even in a pinch, can play cornerback. He served a year-long suspension and came back just really fired up and refocused and more mature. And he's looked, if you remember, Chido Bayouze, who was Colorado's best defensive back the previous 3 years before getting drafted by the Cowboys. He's very much in that same line of player, just really explosive, versatile again, and he's made quite a few plays. Derek McCartney, who's been a mainstay on Colorado's defense, aside from part of last year when he suffered a torn ACL, has started to show the old signs of Derek McCartney. He had a career-high 14 tackles out in Tempe last week, two really big pass breakups on third down. So it looks like he's now in week 9, week 10, finally, you know, becoming the player he used to be. And he's a senior on senior day, so, you know, he's going to be playing with a lot of motivation. And then inside linebacker, they've got a couple guys. Ricky Amboa is their middle linebacker, the quarterback of the defense. He is more brains than talent in terms of athleticism. He knows where to be, but if you get him matched up with the wrong guy, he can't cover guys, and he's had issues in that sense. But the other inside linebacker, Jewel Lewis, is kind of the opposite. He looks to Rick Ambo to tell him where to be, and he can fly around sideline to sideline. So they've got talent at linebacker, and then going back into the secondary, again, it's the D-line that is not all that talented of a group.
I want to talk special teams a little bit. It seems like CU's got a pretty good punt returner and a 30-year-old kicker. Maybe talk about those guys a little bit.
Yeah, Ronnie Blackman has stepped into the punt return role since Isaiah Oliver has been injured the last couple of weeks. And, yeah, he's pretty good. He's averaging 8 yards a return. He was somebody, if you throw on his high school film, like probably two-thirds of his highlight reel was him just housing kick returns and punt returns. so he's pretty good there. He hasn't really – I think he broke a 40-yarder, but he hasn't gotten to the end zone or anything like that. And then, yeah, they've got a 30-year-old – place-kicking true freshman from Australia named Jim Stefano, who we thought was going to struggle this year because even though they closed practices at Colorado, they would end early sometimes. So you would get there early, and you'd sit outside the gates, and you'd be working. And I heard a bunch of times the coaching staff say, look, if we make this field goal, practice ends early, and practice never ended early. So we're thinking, okay, this is going to be a real weakness. But James Stefano, ever since missing a kick in the first game, has been pretty much automatic. He's 16 of 18 right now. That's 88.9%, which is the best in the Pac-12, and he's made all of his extra points. It's just been a really solid kicker for them. Yeah, it's a really weird story. He was a professional soccer player for about 7 or 8 years. And he, I don't know if you're familiar with the Pro Kick Academy in Australia, but they've produced a lot of punters that have been really, really successful. Utah consistently goes over to pull those guys. He's one of the first kickers they've actually produced. Even though it's called Pro Kick, it's mostly been a punting academy. But he was just messing around with a buddy at a park one day, and he was having really good success kicking it through this makeshift field goal post. And he ended up joining that academy, and a year and a half later, ended up signing with Colorado. So it's a really cool story. And he's going to be 34 years old when he's done with the Buffaloes, unless, I guess, he leaves early for the NFL. So, you know, but yeah, it's been one of the good bright spots for Colorado this year. It's been the consistency of James Stefano.
Yeah, crazy. You mentioned a couple of the injuries. I was looking at the chart, like who's been starting every game. It seemed fairly consistent. You mentioned, you know, a more recent one on the offensive line, but it seems like injury-wise, it seems like most of the same starters have been kind of there every week. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, it's been – well, the O-line, it seems like there's been shuffling one new guy every week. Huckins, their starting center, had missed a couple games. Jeremy Irwin, their left tackle, was suspended for the first two games. So they've shuffled a little bit more on the O-line than they have other places. Yeah, defensively, until Isaiah Oliver went down, and then Ryan Muller, who I mentioned, they pretty much run with the same group defensively throughout the season. So I guess that happens. You know, we're going into week 11, so – yeah, I mean, they're relatively healthy. I think losing Tim Lenato and Oliver maybe not being 100%, those a couple of their best players, so they're definitely not feeling as fortunate as maybe some other teams would if they only had, you know, two or three guys that had been banged up.
Yeah, kind of the key. You could have a lot of injuries, or you could have key injuries, and the key injuries usually hurt more.
Yeah.
I know we got to let you go. One last thing. So Colorado's never beat USC 0-11. It's going to be senior day. They're you know, they'll be running out behind Ralphie for the last time with, you know, the greatest tradition. I love that. Bye week, you have the weird bye week. USC doesn't have a bye week until before the championship game. Colorado's is almost as bad. They get a bye before Utah's. At least you get the mountain like rivalry before that. But it seems like this team's playing better. Obviously left some points on the board last weekend, but it just, since that Washington State game, it seems like this team is playing better. I don't know. What's the motivation factor like? How do you think this is going to turn out?
Well, the motivation factor is couldn't possibly be more. You mentioned senior day. This is Philip Lindsay's last game. We haven't talked enough about him. He's unquestionably one of the guys that has endeared himself more to the fan base than any player that I've seen that I've covered. He's just such a relentless player and wears his heart on his sleeve, and it's going to be his last game. And there's 20 other seniors, obviously, and they need one more win for bowl eligibility. This would be the first back-to-back bowl teams in terms of the CU program since 2004-2005. So it's been a really long time since this program's gone to bowl games in back-to-back years. So that would be a huge thing. And, yeah, so the motivation is there, and I would expect them to really put up a fight and make this a competitive game. USC is 11-0 all-time against them. Colorado has played them closer the last 2 years. They've lost those two games by a combined 7 points. But Ronald Jones, the way he's running the ball, the way Colorado can't stop the run, I just don't think there's any way you can possibly pick Colorado to win this football game. I think USC probably wins somewhere in the range of 10 points, maybe up to that 14-point spread. I think it's, 13.5, and kind of in that range.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a two-score game, but I don't think it's going to be one of those games where USC just kind of blows the door off and blows them out the way they had, obviously, when Colorado had first joined the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat there, but who knows? We think we know. We never know. That's just what we think.
Yeah.
But Adam Munster Tiger does a great job, publisher of Buff Stampede. Check him out on Twitter. Follow him at AdamCM777. Hey, Adam, thanks so much for spending some time, and enjoy the game this weekend.
Of course, Ryan. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Adam. Hey, everyone else, we'll be back in a minute. Going to answer some of your questions.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Okay, we are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Going to answer some of your USC football questions you guys have sent in after the game. Of course, USC beating Arizona 49-35. So we have, I think we got one voicemail, text or two, and then a bunch of email questions. So I'm just going to jump right into it, and we'll get going. Let's see, we'll start with Don. He said, was Coach Hyde as harsh on Pete Carroll and his staff as he has been on the last three coaching staffs? What is the over-under on the number of caps/hats that Dan has? He seldom wears the same one twice. And Helton appears to be on solid ground again, but he needs to upgrade the offensive coordinator next year, as he will always be just a very good team that does not meet expectations. He just makes some very bad play calls inside the 5-yard line. From Don. Okay. As far as Coach Harvey Hyde, it's been 10 years with the coach. So we started in 2008, so Pete Carroll was still around. I think he's just always been the same guy. He's like, you know, he's going to tell you like it is. He's not being hard, I don't think. It's just, he's not sugarcoating things. He's not just going to tell you maybe what you want to hear. He's going to tell you, hey, if you see something wrong. And I think towards the end of the Pete Carroll, there was plenty of things that were wrong as well. As far as the number of caps that Dan has, Shotgun's the one that has like 130 of them or something. Shotgun has a whole bunch. I think Dan has a bunch too, but I usually see kind of the same ones. So you know, you can see the kind of same rotation. Shotgun, I would say, the one that has more caps than anybody. Let's see. As far as the offensive coordinator position goes, now I think T. Martin's doing a good job. I think the problem is, and we've talked about this a number of times, I don't think he's calling all of those plays. I don't think when you get down inside the 5 yard line, those are necessarily his. So it's not just about the play call. I just feel like there's a little bit of disruption with the team, where if you have one guy just making all the calls, it does seem like, you know, Tyson Helton calling some third down, maybe Clay Helton stepping in on some other downs. It just doesn't seem like it's cohesive to me. So I think it's simple to just say, oh, just blame T. Martin, but I wouldn't really go that far. Let's see, we got Rich. He says, it seems very clear to me from the outset, replacing three offensive linemen has been very difficult, particularly when combined with the nagging injuries and no bye week. Ronald Jones II does not run for 194, nor does any running back without the offensive line opening holes. I actually think this offensive line is better than last year, but it's taking them 6 to 8 weeks to show it. I also think the linebacker core is better mainly through maturation, yet what is a glaring is Darnold's erratic play, mainly in the turnover department, which was not on display last year. Clearly, he has a very talented quarterback and a leader because of that. Along with the talent surrounding him, he's been able to overcome some spotty play. They should be 9-1 as the WSU game was winnable, if not for the injuries. That said, I'm still scratching my head over the performance on both sides of the ball versus Notre Dame. Even at full strength, they do not win that game. Is that part of their identity, or have they repaired and moved on? Rich Gonzalez from Michigan, SC class of 65. Okay, so a lot in there, Rich. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the way USC played that day, they would have beat just about anybody. But if you look at the whole schedule, you say they could be 9-1. Well, they could be 6-4, too. I mean, won some games they shouldn't win, or likely shouldn't have won, the way they played. Not that they shouldn't have, they weren't the better team. It's been very inconsistent. And I thought they played really well twice. That was Arizona State and Stanford. They played pretty good against Arizona. But there were some lapses there as well, leaving a lot of just yards on the table, points, you know, they left out, they could have scored more, bad in the red zone. Yeah, I think there's a lot of issues there. As far as, like, I don't think they're thinking about the Notre Dame game now. They have the sights of winning the Pac-12 South, and there's, you know, even an outside chance of making the college football playoffs still. We got a question about that a little bit later. But, yeah, Rich, thanks for the question there. It's, I just would say you can't look at this team as here's what the team is and they're the same from week to week. It's pretty different from week to week. It's kind of like my golf game from day to day. It just changes. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And unfortunately for USC this year, it's been not as good more often than not. Now, they got wins, but they just didn't look very good. Bill from San Jose, a.k.a. Trojan War Machine. I love all the podcasts. You guys are awesome. Nice shot of Keeley on national TV the other night during the game, too. Yeah, so Keeley films in the end zone, if you don't know. And she usually gets on there on the TV broadcast every once in a while when they're scoring. She's trying to film where USC is heading in. So when USC gets close to the goal line, look for Keeley in the end zone. He said, I'm wondering if we'll see the return of Porter Gustin, Christian Rector, and a few others at the game in Santa Clara, maybe holding most of the walking wounded back for 3 weeks rest and rehab before unleashing them on UW, Wazoo, or the Cardinal. Maybe we see a couple guys for a few plays to get the rust off versus UCLA, but I would think 3 weeks of rehab ought to really make the difference in some of these guys. Also, there are some guys with nagging injuries that have been playing. Do you think we ought to rest, maybe get them out for a series or two? Thanks and fight on, Trojan War Machine. Thanks, Bill, for that. That's an interesting point because that's when the bye week is coming, and if you want to, you know, Colorado's not been great. They're 5-5. UCLA obviously is just kind of tanking right now. But I don't think this team is playing well enough to, like, rest able bodies. For, like, a Christian Rector, you know, he had the hand injury. It's all wrapped up. And, you know, sometimes you can play with a club. It looks like they're kind of holding him on that. But I get the feeling he would be back at least by then. Porter Gustin, it's hard to say because, I mean, he was out, you know, 5-6 weeks. Didn't practice at all, comes back and plays, and basically re-injures it again. It's, you know, be less than 5 or 6 weeks before you'd have to play in the Pac-12 championship game. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. Did they bring him back too early? I mean, it's really hard to say. You would kind of lean towards yes, that maybe they did. The fact that he didn't practice. So just think about this. So the Porter Gustin's put on pads twice since week three, since the Texas game. So the first half of the Texas game, he was wearing pads. Then he didn't wear them again after that. Didn't wear them at any practice at all. And then for the ASU game, he puts pads on and goes out there and plays. So hasn't practiced at all. I don't know. I mean, because he played for a little while and got, you know, and got injured again or re-injured it, they're probably going to be less likely to let him go. We talked about this in the war room a little bit, but my guess is right now you're not going to see him. But who knows? You know, we haven't seen him in practice, and we're not seeing him practicing until he gets out there and practices. I think it's hard to just stick him in the game. So we'll see that bye week heading in. If they make it the Pac-12 championship game like everyone expects, we'll see if he comes back. If he doesn't practice that week, then I don't think he's going to end up playing. All right, next up we got Ben. He said, Ben from Central Valley. Question has nothing to do with anything besides my own curiosity. What do you think is the likelihood of Cam Smith returning next year for a senior year and possibly even going to wear number 55? I think it'd be cool to see another USC linebacker wear number 55, or would you consider it a given that he'll declare for the draft? Thanks for the input, Ben. He's been, you know, obviously a really consistent and productive producer for USC, but I wouldn't say like some of the measurables that you look for in the NFL. It's not like he's going to be jumping off the charts with those kind of things, like a big vertical leap or 40-yard dash or any of that stuff. So I think there's a good likelihood that he ends up returning. Haven't really talked to him about it. Haven't really thought about it, to be honest, all that much. But I kind of get the feeling he would return. I don't think he's going to change numbers. 35 is also a number like players like Jeff Kopp and former USC linebackers have worn before. I know it became like a punter number or something for a while, but it was a linebacker number before that. So he's never had any indication of wanting to switch up numbers or anything like that. So I think it's most likely that he ends up sticking with that number. And we'll see if he comes back, but I kind of think he will. Okay, next up is Brian in Baldwin Hills. He said, questions for Ryan's solo podcast. Ryan, I don't think I ever heard your opinion on the Reggie Bush situation. What are your thoughts on him still being banned by the university? What are your opinions on him overall? Brian in Baldwin Hills. Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, I think it's ridiculous. That's just, it's pretty simple with that. The fact that the NCAA made him a persona non grata around campus, like, he was ineligible, you know, for the benefits that his family took, right? You know, the punishments obviously was stupid when USC not know, you know, how the USC is going to know what was going on. And Todd McNair's lawsuit will prove all that out eventually when it gets through. But, I mean, it's not like, I don't know what he did that you can make it so you can never talk to this guy and never mention him ever again. It just seems ridiculous. So, totally overreaching. I think USC needs to push back on them and say, look, here's what we're going to do. We're bringing Reggie Bush back. We're going to talk about him again. We're going to be able to do all that again. And I think, you know, try to work something out with the Heisman Trust where they restore the Heisman, which, you know, he was offering to give it back. Just like, look, moved on. This has all been ridiculous. So let's go from here. So, yeah, I guess that's my quick opinion on that. Neil in Manila said, is the game against Colorado a trap game? Emotional Pac-12 South wins, different weather situation, and Colorado being one way from bowl eligibility. So we talked to Adam earlier in the show, and I think you get a feel for it. This is the team's going to be fired up for this one because it's senior day. They really are. They're going to be honoring at halftime members of the Athletic Hall of Fame. So that's going to be big. You know, Philip Lindsay's last game at home, and he's been, like Adam said, just a fan favorite and just someone that's been great for everybody there. I mean, the way USC's playing, I don't know if there's any trap games because you have to worry about them all, but this is certainly a potential one where, you know, USC's favored by 2 touchdowns and they mess around. Colorado gets on a roll, starts running the football. USC's had some tackling problems. Phillip Lindsay can have a huge game. Stephen Montez played really well since they threatened to bench him after getting shut out by Washington State. So they really shot themselves in the foot last week, losing to Arizona State. And that's a pretty good Arizona State team, as you see. You know, they USC rolled them, but everyone else, they've been playing really well. So, yeah, I think there's that potential. So you definitely got to watch out for that. Earl in West LA says, I'm watching the replay of the third quarter when Khalil Tate fumbled, and I can't believe the mistakes the officials made. First, they missed the fumble. Second, they blew the whistle to stop the play instead of letting it play out as it could have been a scoop and score by Jack Jones. Third, he called They called Clay Helton for unsportsmanlike conduct for running on the field down to the 15-yard line to point out their mistake. Finally, when the call was overturned, making Helton right, they didn't even apologize for being wrong, but upheld the unsportsmanlike call. Earlier, Jones and Harris were called for some silly little dance that no one saw that was away from the ball. Dan Weber was right, saying a seasoned official would have taken the players aside and given them a warning. The game tickets were incorrect. They should have said the officials in Arizona versus USC, Earl of West LA. There were a lot of a comedy of errors in that game by the officiating. And it's, yeah, it was disheartening. I actually emailed an official from the Pac-12, and we'll put the kind of response we got in the war room, but nothing that you would say like, yeah, there was an admission of people doing things wrong. Now they have to review these plays, and will that crew like get some, you know, demerits, get some not be able to do the postseason? I would guess. I mean, it was really, really bad. They took over the third quarter, and that's not what you want officials to do. You want them to call the game straight, but not be the center of attention, you know? And they were the center of their attention because of what they did, not because of there was way too many flags or blah, blah, blah. Like if the teams are playing poorly and doing all kinds of bad stuff, and that's why the officials are center of attention, that's one thing. This was their own volition. They were the center of attention because of their own mistakes, not because of what USC or Arizona was doing. Steve has a real short question. Guys, can we beat UW? Yeah, dude. USC beat Washington last year at home. If they play Washington in Santa Clara, they might be the favorite in that game. You saw what Arizona State did to Washington. Now, USC can come out and lay an egg. But if USC comes out and plays well, certainly. I think they match up pretty well against Washington. It's just a team that, you know, USC's got a playmaking quarterback. Washington has more of a system quarterback. He's more of a Cody Kessler kind of type. Is when things are on schedule and things are working well, they're fine. They're moving the ball. They run the ball. He can make some throws. But even when they're winning games, look at it. I mean, he's throwing for like 11 of 20 for 194 yards with a pick and a touchdown. Like, he's not setting the world on fire or anything. Jake Browning I'm talking about. So, yeah, I think USC matches up pretty well. I think Washington can make the playoff, you know. But they got to go through USC. And I think if USC comes out and plays well, they'll have a bye week. Washington will be on a short week. Yeah, I think they got a really good chance. CWC says, not enough attention on the missed attitude of the refs towards USC. Purposely, the refs slowed down the game and let Arizona back into it. Right, it's the second week in a row where the refs are asleep and missed, I think it means outright holds, and penalties the other team is committing. U of A was holding all over the place and no call. No way 14 penalties to UA's 4, actually they had 3, is legit. CWC. So, I think the discrepancy was too much. I'm not saying it's like against USC. Like in that game, it certainly seems like it was. But there was other games where I felt like it was bad officiating that helped USC, like the Texas game. Even I think some in the Arizona State game. Now, you look at the stats, though, Arizona State's one of the most disciplined, as far as penalty goes, teams in the country. So they had above their average in the USC game. Arizona had below their average, but they still only average about 5 penalties a game, where USC's up like 9, something like that. So, yeah, USC's got a lot of penalties, but I think a lot of that has to do with the Pac-12 refs. But there's a lot of Pac-12 teams that are in the very bottom of the conference in penalties and penalty yards. But there's a couple at the top, too, which is kind of strange. Let's go Jim B. He said, great podcast. Thanks, Jim. What's the deal with Connor Murphy and Wally Batiku? When Porter Gustin was out, they took an inside defensive lineman, Christian Rector, and moved him outside. When Rector was out, they took an inside linebacker and moved him outside. Are we to surmise anything from that? I always heard that Batiku was kind of a cyborg when it came to athletic ability. Are they ever going to be starters? From Jim. Yeah, I mean, people ask kind of this question a lot. They've had some opportunities to be in there. I think Wally's first play, he got an offsides against Arizona State. Yeah, you look at him, he's a freak. I mean, I was standing next to him late last week interviewing him because he played at Sarah. I was talking about Khalil Tate and, you know, arms, everything. He's just like jacked. You're like, man, this dude is a freak. Like, he looks way better than just about anybody you're going to see putting on pads. But he hasn't played like that. I think the same thing with Connor Murphy, who's got bagged up. He wasn't actually practicing yesterday. I think there's some potential there, but they got to get some more turns. I think they're in there. They just haven't produced. So it's going to be up to the coaches to make sure these guys develop. If they're not performing up to what the standards are, they have to, you know, they have to get there. But I think they're athletic enough. I think they're, you know, there's ability there, but they haven't had that kind of production when you get on the field. Hey, Ryan, this is Deshaun from Fullerton. First time sending in a question. Over the course of the whole season, I've heard so many fans who are sick of the play calling and knocking on T. Martin. It's time to credit him for the offensive rhythm and tearing up defenses, or are we taking advantage of mediocre defenses the past couple of weeks? Thanks for your hard work, Deshaun. Yeah, no, I definitely give him credit. I think he showed, and again, how much – it's hard to say who's doing what, because you basically have three offensive people there, T, Tyson, and Clay. So all of them are involved, you know, but T's the one that's getting the blame and the credit. But I think they all kind of have their hands in there. But I think, to me, it seemed like it flowed really well at Arizona State. They had a good game plan. What was stopping Washington? What was stopping Utah? They threw over the top. You know, they got those intermediate passes. They kind of backed the defense off a little bit, took away what Arizona State was doing really well to slow people down. USC was able to take that away with the passing game, and that just opened things up, and then they started to run the ball as well. So I thought it was a great game plan, you know. And, you know, outside of some red zone troubles against Arizona, obviously they moved the ball really well. You have over 300 yards passing, over 300 yards rushing. Yeah, certainly you got to give T. Martin credit there. So thanks for the question, Deshaun. Keep sending them in. We got Dave and Glendora. Hey, Ryan and gang, can anyone tell me why Rojo was in the game running the ball with approximately 2 minutes left and a 14-point lead? For that matter, why was a limping Darnold in the game at that point? Surely Matt Fink would have been capable of ending the game. Can you imagine if either of them would have been injured? Not very smart, in my opinion. Thanks for the great work you do, Dave and Glendora. Yeah, 100% agree. They do this a lot. It's there's some reason just substituting isn't this team's strength. And now, Rojo went out for a significant portion of time after that 98-yard run. He was really tired, so they had the Akacedric Ware come in, and obviously Ware went over 100 yards as well. But, yeah, that's I'd like to see him substitute more. I agree with you there. Joan wrote in, said, that was the longest, most boring third quarter in history. The refs did everything they could to stop our momentum, and they did for a while, as the frustration was palpable with both our offense and defense. Granted, I guess SC got a little sloppy, but it was ridiculous, especially when Jack Jones picked up the fumble and could have gone for a scoop six. Why are the Pac-12's refs so bad game after game? I don't see this in other conferences. It's embarrassment. That's from Joan. Yeah. I agree. Joan, it was bad. We kind of talked about the refs and stuff. They did, you know, I don't think it was on purpose, but they did kind of take away a lot of USC's momentum. And then once they kind of slowed the game down and bogged down, that's when Arizona started getting rolling too. So I think it just kind of worked out that way. It was pretty bad. Yeah, so it was bad. So we have more, like Robin in Virginia, about the penalties as well. I think we kind of talked about that. He's wanted to know if USC is disciplined enough. I kind of think they are. Like T. Martin talked about the holding call that wiped out the 98-yard Ronald Jones run, and he said, I don't know what to tell him because his hands were inside. He was moving the guy like you teach him to, and they get a call for a hold, which it looked like he was doing everything right. So in situations like that, you're like, yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, it looks like you did things right. They threw the flag anyway. Jeff, the math teacher, said, I checked my DVR in the third quarter. Took approximately 58 minutes of that. 15 minutes were actual football being played, and 6 to 8 minutes were commercials. The other 35 to 37 minutes, Pac-12 officiating. Fun. Pac-12 way after dark. Jeff, the math teacher. Yeah, I think look for Shotgun's participation chart. I think one of the notes he has is how long all the reviews and stuff took for the officials. There were like 5 of reviews in the game. It took a long time. So they certainly delayed the game a lot in official time. Tyler and Sammamish, Washington. Serious question. How are the Pac-12 officials selected? Are they paid? You know, I think, Tyler, we might have answered this one with Dan Weber, but yeah, they're they are paid. there's we talked about it a lot with Dan Weber, but it's it's a paid position. They get out there, just don't look very well. Ben wants to know about Ben from Central Valley. Was it Jalen Green or John Houston who scored the touchdown on the block punt? TV, they said it was Houston, but Ryan tweeted it was Green. Just curious. Yeah, so they announced Houston, but then we found out it was Green. The guys on the sideline told us it was Jalen Green. They have similar, very similar body types. They wear the same number. So they just screwed that one up. I don't know if they fix. I think they didn't even fix it on the TV broadcast. I think they said when John Houston got the interception, they still credited him for the touchdown later on. But it was definitely Jalen Green. John and Brea, how could Port Augusta be cleared to play 3 days after surgery, but he's held out playing now? Clearly playing against Texas was a huge short-sighted mistake. I don't think anyone in the stadium thought he should be playing in that game, yet he did. Different doctors. How much are these decisions up to the players, coaches, or the doctors? That's from John. Yeah, so this was. I think it was a mistake having him play that quickly after the surgery. Was it a mistake after 6 weeks and playing against Arizona State because now he's out again? I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just a situation. You know, there was definitely doctors that were consulted. Has to get cleared by the doctors. If the player doesn't want to play, he's not going to play, and the coaches, you know, make that determination. But I think Clay Helton will basically rely on what the doctors are telling him. It's hard to imagine that the doctor said, yeah, play for sure, you know, 4 days after you had surgery on your foot, but apparently that's what it was. Okay, we got one last one. It's a voicemail question, and we're going to talk some college football playoff. Here you go.
Hi, Ryan. This is Daniel in Los Angeles. I'm going to make this quick. This is a statement for Dan Weber, Harvey Hyde, whoever has a podcast first. USC must be in favor with the best, football gods, because it's rare to see a Pac-12 team move from number 17 to number 11. That tells me that the College Football Playoff Committee is in favor of USC's schedule right now for them to pass them over the media darlings of Ohio State and Penn State right now. For them to do that, that means USC's two losses to two ranked teams holds weight versus the poor schedules that the Big Ten teams have played. So they're sitting in prime position right now with majority of the top 10 teams playing each other this weekend. USC still has a great shot to make the college football playoffs because everyone's about to beat each other above them. Wisconsin plays Michigan, Iowa, you have the Georgia, Auburn, Alabama still have to play Georgia, Auburn, Clemson, Miami. They're all about to tear each other apart. So if Washington can win out and USC can beat Washington in the playoffs, I mean, the Pac-12 championship, USC has a very high shot of making the college football playoffs. Very high. Thanks. Your thoughts.
Okay, thanks for the question. I would definitely disagree with you on very high just by winning out. We have not seen a two-loss team make the college football playoff. And now there's been some carnage. And it's nice that USC's up to number 11. The only two-loss team ahead of them right now is Auburn. You know, and Auburn still has to play Alabama and stuff. But I'd caution you because it's going to be tough. I think multiple things have to happen for some of the teams above USC to fall below them. It's not just about there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Those teams, if they all lose, it's not like USC moves above all of them. So you're talking about an undefeated Miami team, undefeated Wisconsin team. Notre Dame has one loss, but they beat the crap out of USC. So they probably got to lose two more times for USC to jump them. I think it's nice to be, you know, knocking on the door of the top 10. And if USC wins out, we'll securely be in the top 10. I could see being like up to 5, 6, 7. Fairly quickly, there's potential there, but to get into that top four, like I said, it hasn't happened before with a two-loss team. What would have to happen? I think Auburn, you know, that's easy. Like I think they're inflated. I think the committee, you know, not having like a Michigan ranked and having Auburn and LSU with three losses in there, it's like I'm not, you know, not a huge fan of that. I mean, it's nice to be ahead of Ohio State and Penn State. I think the Big Ten, someone knocking off Wisconsin. Wisconsin's schedule is terrible. So letting them go undefeated and then, like, losing in the championship game to somebody like an Ohio State, you know, I think their resume wouldn't be all that good. USC doesn't have, like, top 25 wins right now. But they played a lot of the bowl teams, so they've played good teams like that, and we'll see. Some of those teams could kind of sneak back in. Not having Stanford or Arizona ranked anymore certainly hurts a little bit, and we'll see what, you know, if those teams kind of end up moving up. You know, Washington's ahead of them, but that's easy. You know, you could beat Washington. Miami and Clemson, you know, both from the ACC. You're going to need a little bit of work there. Oklahoma and TCU, both from the Big 12. You're going to need a little work there. You know, those teams could, like, one could beat the other, and then they could play again in the championship game and knock each other off. Miami and Notre Dame are playing this weekend, so they end up playing each other. But still, neither one of those is, you know, with a loss, is going to drop below USC, I would think. In the SEC, you got Georgia and Alabama both undefeated. I think getting two SEC teams would obviously hurt anyone's chances of making it in with two losses. I think if you look at two-loss resumes, if Michigan State runs the table, they'll probably have the best two-loss resume. USC has Colorado and UCLA up next. Neither one's going to have a winning record this year if USC beats them. And then they'd have Washington, which is good. But, Michigan State would have a ton of great wins, and they're right behind USC. So if they make a run and they finish with two wins and, like, beat Wisconsin in the – they'll pass USC. So, no, I don't think this is, like, a great chance. I think there's an outside chance, and they would need a bunch of carnage and some crazy stuff to happen ahead of them. But I think the focus has to be – and Clay Helton was asked about this yesterday – just beating the teams on their schedule and doing that. And if you do that, you win the Pac-12 South and you win the Pac-12. I think it's successful. Not winning the Pac-12 this season, I don't think would be as successful. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that. But thank you very much for the question. And thanks to our guest, Adam Munstertiger, previewing USC and Colorado. Thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening to our little Peristyle podcast show. We're going to talk to Gerard Martinez. We're going to have our Facebook Live show on Thursday at noon. And, of course, we're going to have the Family Feud podcast with Shotgun and Keeley coming up as well. So stay tuned. Lots of USC content here on our podcast page. You can find us on peristylepodcast.com. We're on Audio Boom, Stitcher Radio, all those kind of things. And, of course, we're always on uscfootball.com. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.